Hello and welcome to Recovery Internet Radio, broadcast live and direct from Straight Stuff Studios. You're tuning in to episode number 71, if you've been keeping track. I've lost track once or twice, but thanks for being with us tonight. We've got a great show for you. Before we get started, we just have a couple of quick announcements, if you will, a couple of words about some of our friends. I'd like to let you know that you should go and check out Double Take. Double Take, they're a fantastic band. They perform a lot of awesome cover music from, you know, 50s, 60s, all the way till today. Their next gig is, the last one was the 13th, so if you missed it, so sorry for you, but Saturday, August 10th, they'll be playing at the El Sombrero Restaurant and Lounge in Elmhurst. They'll also be, get to them in August, because otherwise you got to wait till September 20th in Schaumburg. So, in Carroll Stream. Anyway, so that is Saturday, August 10th at 9 p.m. Check them out. Double Take Band Chicago. DoubleTakeChicago.com. So if you want to get their information, check it out. We also, if you were there, you know, if you're from the area here, we're in McHenry County. And if you got a chance to come out to McHenry to see the Fiesta Day parades, you might have seen us out there today as we were in the parade for an organization called Sidekicks Mentoring. It's a youth mentoring program, no cost, volunteer program designed to offer structure and support for maintaining a healthy, sober lifestyle.
We were the ones with the yellow shirts and $150 worth of candy.
Yeah, it went pretty fast.
We hope you enjoyed
the Tootsie Pops. So check us out. You can check out our website at sidekicksmentoring.org, for all the information about that program. So check it out. Let's see, what else are we talking about here tonight? How can I forget to mention our very own website, recoveryinternetradio.com. We've got some new links. There's a link section, as most websites will have. I'm not surprising anybody here, but we've got some new links in there. So check out one of our newer partners, Drug Dangers, with drugdangers.com. I think that they have got some good information. It's a good resource if you're curious or have questions about anything that might be going on. It's a good place to look for some information there. So, one more thing. If you haven't, or you didn't already know this, Mr. Rick Atwater has been writing an article in the local paper here. It's the Northwest Herald. If you're from the area, you probably know about it. It's called Straight Talk. So he is in there, I believe, every Sunday in the sidetrack section.
Yeah. For longer than we would like to mention.
Maybe before I was born. No, it was probably after I was born. Maybe that's why he started writing it. I don't know. in any case, check it out. It's in there every Sunday. Or you can go to northwestherald.com and you can find it in their archives. They keep the last maybe 5-10 articles, something like that. So if you don't like to listen and you'd rather read, then you can just do it that way. I'm going to pass the mic over to our host, Mr. Rick Atwater.
Thank you. Thank you. I got a couple of things. First of all, let's see. I want to try to get this right. I want to mention our new Twitter friend, PGA golfer Pat Perez. So, you know, if you follow Pat, I guess, what does that mean then? If they follow Pat, then I'll show up.
Yeah, you'll show up in his friends section. So then they'll be able to look for you guys.
Look for us if you follow Pat, who's he's an interesting guy and a very good golfer.
Yes,
if you follow Pat, you can find us. And our Twitter handle is at Rick Atwater.
Certainly is.
So, and that's by the way, you can tweet into the show live at Rick Atwater, and we'd love to hear from you if you choose to do that.
Yeah,
you
please feel free.
Show up on our board.
I check the entire show. Just tweet me. I'll answer you.
Yeah,
I will.
Yeah, we will. We promise.
Absolutely.
And you can also call in at 323-792-2977. That's our calling number. We welcome calls. And the one last thing I want to say is there was a PBS series called The Magnificent Obsession, and it ran. They may still be running older shows, but it used to run at like 6 o'clock on Sunday morning. And as you might guess, the Magnificent Obsession had to do with alcoholism and drug addiction. And the guy who ran it, his name was Jim Nader. Jim passed away recently, but I just wanted to say our show has just inadvertently, I mean, mm-hmm. Jim was sort of a hero, and I listened to the show a few times, but that since that show is no longer recording, as far as I know, this show is very similar to that. If anybody out there is from PBS is listening, talk to us, because we'd love to continue the legacy that Jim started.
NPR. NPR?
Yeah, National Public Radio.
Yeah.
It was on National Public Radio. Mm-hmm. So just want to throw that in, because that was a very meaningful thing for a lot of people, and it was for me, and we'd like to continue the legacy.
Yeah, good program.
It was a good program. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And they timed it just right so that they could get the drunks coming home from the bar.
Driving.
Yeah. Exactly. So anyway, those of you out there who are listening, I'm sure understand that little thing. But anyway, thanks for joining us tonight where we are every Sunday night at 8 o'clock. Thanks to Chris. And
hey.
We hope you you call us for questions if you have them. And so, our tag tonight is The Mirror Does Lie. And our guest is Sue. And I think maybe we would like to get ready to roll.
I guess so.
Yeah, get to it here. Let's go.
Want another scream before we start,
I'm
or should
here.
We just go?
Okay. I gotta talk, I guess.
All right. So, the first, you know, we've talked a little bit about some of the questions I wanted to ask you beforehand, but let's talk about the distortion thing first, just to sort of get that out of the way. So, when did you first notice when did you first know that you had a distorted view?
I never knew that the mirror was a distortion, really.
Okay.
It was the camera, and it confused me looking in the mirror and then looking at pictures. And I really didn't, mm-hmm. I didn't know it was the mirror. I didn't know if it was the camera. I just knew that what I saw didn't look like what I knew in my mind, what I knew I looked like.
So what was like when you were looking at pictures of yourself at the time?
Let's say when I was, 18.
Okay.
That's when really when I was 18 and I went to college, that's when my real problem started.
Mm-hmm.
Because before that, I, for whatever reason, had a really fast metabolism and was thin, and mm-hmm. I ate all the time. And I didn't gain weight. And so when I went to college, I don't know what happened, but regular stuff happened. But God forbid I gained like 10 pounds, and it seemed like, you know, 80.
So when you looked at a picture of yourself,
yes,
you looked much heavier than...
Yeah, I was horrified. I was horrified.
Yeah.
I would sometimes look in the mirror and be a little, you know, disgusted, but when I saw it in a picture, it looked so much worse than the mirror, and the mirror, I'm sure, looked, to me, worse than I actually was.
Yeah.
Because now I see pictures from back then, I'm like, oh, I looked really good. How can that be? I don't get it.
Did you know that it was a distortion, or did you just really think that you were becoming, you know, really overweight?
No, I thought, here's the problem. I would see me in the picture, and
yeah.
I would think I looked awful, like terrible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I literally think there was something wrong with the camera. But then I'd see, like, my roommate next to me, and she looked exactly the way that she looked. So I knew there was a problem, but I'm like, why is it only messing with me?
What's the common denominator here? Yeah.
I was like, that can't be me, but she looks normal. I didn't want to believe it, but it's like I saw myself as looking terrible, but more terrible in the picture than I really thought I looked. I don't know if that makes sense, but I didn't feel good about myself, but that really like hit the nail on the head. If you see yourself in a picture, it's like, oh my God, really bad, worse than I thought.
So did you have that image, or that, you know, not feeling good about yourself going in, Or did you?
Yeah, way young.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so,
way.
So that was
way back. I just didn't have the weight thing as much.
Okay.
Going back, I had. The
so talk a little bit about that and maybe where that came from for you.
Well, let's see. So there was probably nothing huge except for that I was very shy and I was really afraid of everything when I was little.
Yeah.
We happened to move. I mean, I remember being real happy as a little kid. We happened to move when I was in first grade from New York to Illinois, and so I had to make new friends, and I found out I wasn't good at it. and if you're not good at it and you're afraid, then people think there's something. I'm pretty sure kids thought there was something wrong with me because I was so quiet. So that creates its own.
Sometimes they think kids are. That sometimes quiet kids get labeled, you know, stuck up.
It could be stuck up, or it could be. I didn't really talk much. It was like I was afraid. Just put it this way: I was afraid of everything.
Yeah. Okay.
You go around the just silly things. You go around the room and read out of the book. I would spend the whole time trying to. Where am I going to have to read? I got to make sure I practice before it comes to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and terrible
yeah.
Fear and stress and anxiety.
Yeah.
So
self-conscious.
Self-conscious.
Yeah.
That created like a separateness for myself. But then I was always also the teacher's pet because I could excel sort of in that way, one-on-one with someone of a different age than my own peer group. And I found money all the time on the ground.
Wait. I like the change of gears.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go down that path for a while.
Yeah. So I would find, here's the thing though, I'd find money.
Yeah.
I would spend my playground time looking for money on the ground, taking it to the office to get like pats on the back for being so honest, turning in the money. Meanwhile, when I got older, I had no problem stealing, you know, from people because whatever just got me through at that time.
Right.
You know?
What were the other kids thinking when you were finding money and taking it to the office?
I have no idea. It was in my own head.
You were just in your own world.
Until about fourth grade when I got a friend.
Ah, okay. Okay.
I got a friend in fourth grade.
Uh-huh.
I really just felt alone, and that went on throughout my childhood, I guess, because I remember, I mean, I was kind of sick. I feel pretty good now, and I've said so many times in the past years, like, that really, I am so lucky I'm not just crazy, because when I was little, I had a fear that I was going to get crazy.
Yeah.
I would get crazy, and then I would die young. That was my thing. I was so afraid of dying young and afraid of being crazy, and I didn't feel right in my head, even though I appeared just quiet and shy.
There was more going on. Yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't talk about it. You know.
Can you make a connection now, looking back on it, to that way you were then, to the later problems with, you know, addictions and.
Right. Well, the way I was, I needed a fix for it.
Mm.
You know? Yeah, I need a fix for that. because when you feel so, my brain would move really fast, and I was real compulsive in my thinking. I remember spending time in the classroom, like, if I can hold my breath till the hand gets to the 12, everything will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew what everything was, but just everything.
Everything. Yeah, and that could take a while.
And, you know, if you're holding your breath, that's not a good thing in class.
No.
I came home and did that, and I passed out.
And if you're holding your breath until everything gets fixed.
You might not make it.
You might not. That whole die young thing could very well. Yeah. But that was that's how
so
compulsive
that was
you were.
Going on young.
That was the level, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, my parents, they thought I was perfectly fine. I was so nice and polite and quiet, and I always played in my room. My mom still says to me, I still don't get it. You just seemed so fine. And that's what I wanted. I didn't want anyone to know that I didn't feel good.
So you were hiding how you felt.
Yeah.
And then, so you not only then needed a fix for how you felt, but
yeah.
then hiding how you felt makes it even more
yeah.
necessary to have a fix.
Yeah. And then when you're that afraid of people and stuff, then when I discovered alcohol, that was like a really good fix for that problem.
Oh, yeah.
One more
when, did,
fear.
When did you discover that? Was that high school, college?
15.
15?
Yeah, 15.
Yeah.
Yep.
How did you discover it?
Oh, I remember that perfectly.
Yeah, the magic solution.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, my parents.
When everything became okay.
Yeah, my parents went out of town. My brother had beer. He was a year older. He had beer in the refrigerator. And my best friend and I sat down and went, let's see what this is all about. Everybody's talking about this. Let's just try one.
Mm-hmm.
So we split, well, no, let's split one.
Mm-hmm.
We split one, split another, split, I think, three maybe. Don't remember the rest of the night. Blackout very first time out of the gate. And, but I didn't know it was a blackout. I'd be like, how come I can't remember? I mean, you remember. We had the same thing. I don't understand this. You'll have to finish telling me what happened last night. But whatever it was, I know it was fun. And then it just, I mean, it rapidly had started. And no one ever, none of my friends, even though they all knew I drank, or I had a worse effect, I guess, is what it was, than they did. And maybe I drank more. I don't even know.
Yeah.
But I fell asleep, like, in public bathrooms. I mean, in my own house, like, anywhere. You know, I call it fall asleep, but I'm pretty sure it's passing out.
Mm-hmm. In some circles, yeah.
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 Yeah. Like, if you're at the Pizza Hut or something, and
yeah.
you're
and you slump and over into the pizza.
Yeah, you're not sleeping.
Probably
no.
not. Did they think, did
they
your friends
care.
Think you were just kind of,
they thought it was fun. Yeah, I had more friends then, see? And I was fun.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was lucky, too.
I knew a guy once who had his family buffaloed for years that he had a sleep disorder. Honest to God. Because he'd get drunk and he'd fall, you know, he'd lay on the, he'd go to sleep on the floor, you know.
When I came into AA,
mm-hmm.
Which was a little over 15 years ago, I was so positive that I probably didn't have a, I wasn't an alcoholic. I knew I had a drinking problem. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I wasn't going to tell anyone I came.
Yeah.
Because I was pretty sure no one had ever really said much to me about it. You know, it was just me that was bothered by it. Everybody else thought it, even all through life. That was a great time. And when I came in, I was afraid to tell anybody that I came to AA because they would be like, what for? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. You don't have a problem.
Right.
But when I finally told my husband after like a month of going to meetings, I told him I came and he goes, I thought he was going to be mad that I came. He's like, you never really did get that stopping part down. So
it
my
was,
fear was squashed.
He kind of got it.
Yeah, he got it.
Well, you know, I mean, one of the neat things about the message that you've got is that a majority of the things that were happening to you and that had happened to you since you were a kid happened in your head.
In my head, yes.
And that, you know, you can look fine and people think you're fine and you can be really, really not fine.
Yes, unfine.
Yeah.
Well, I started binging and purging in college my freshman year. Okay, I got married to him. We're still married. When I was 23, I decided I wanted to try to stop doing that because maybe it wasn't good for me. I wasn't positive, but maybe when I was 30.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told him,
mm-hmm.
I mean, a long time after I was going into counseling and things for it, I told him about it. And he's like, what? You did what? I was like, you've been living with me for 12 years. How do you not know this?
He didn't know that you were purging.
He did not know. Mm-mm.
And just for people.
And
who,
he was shocked. Yeah.
Really?
And he didn't know I had a problem with my.
With eating and with the thinking related
thinking.
To that?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Well, and because you were apparently pretty good at keeping it to yourself.
I was, yeah.
And is it a shameful thing? Is that why you keep it to yourself? Or is it.
Well, yeah. I would have been ashamed if I would have been like caught in the act because it would have been hard to explain. And, you know, it's just a gross topic, like throwing up, it's disgusting.
Sure.
You think of it like when you have the stomach flu.
Right.
Nobody wants to do that. That is so awful. Right. And I hate to say it, but binging and purging is a whole different thing. It's nothing like. I mean, I hate the stomach flu, too. I can't. I wish
but
I could die.
But that's not a good way to understand the
not
process.
At all.
So, I mean, even though it's a gross topic,
it's terrible.
This is a really gross group, so let's go with
good.
It.
Good. All right.
You know, so explain it. Explain, if you can, how that works. How does you know, binging and purging work?
Okay, so it's for me the way it was. And I can't call myself cured. I haven't done it in years, but
mm-hmm.
I have the desire every once in a while, I suppose just like the 15 years of sobriety, the flash of like a drink.
A drink
you know,
would taste
flash,
pretty darn
but,
good or this or that.
But then
yeah.
It goes away. I have that same memory, you
mm-hmm.
know, of it like, boy, if I could just eat some more ice cream
mm-hmm.
and see what would happen is stress in my head. And then I have to have relief.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was trying not to drink, I would eat. See, so you can't just drink. You can't go to work drunk, but you could eat.
Sure.
So if you eat something like ice cream, you can throw it up really easily. And so you get all the stress relief within the eating it. And then there's too much guilt because now you're going to get fat. You know, now you
right.
just ate like literally a quart of ice cream.
I mean, this may sound stupid, but why is ice cream easy? Because of its liquid nature,
yeah,
it just comes
like
back up.
Bagels and cream cheese, don't do that.
Okay, I gotcha.
That's an interesting
yeah.
point, though.
The locks, yeah, the no.
That,
okay,
that was that you were consciously thinking that, like,
oh
well,
yeah,
I if I have ice cream, that's okay because
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
uh-huh.
it was a lot of strategic planning,
yeah.
and hiding
mm.
and trying to be really quiet.
And people, then, do people have, like, binge food, things that they,
oh, they do.
Their specialties?
Yeah. yeah.
And
whatever it is has to be topped off with ice cream. That's so terrible.
It is.
Sorry.
So that's okay. I mean, but.
So I'm going to feel really bad the next time I go to, like, an ice cream store now. They're going to be like, she's not better.
Yeah. And we're anonymous. Don't worry.
Good.
It's not.
Oh, yeah, no one knows.
Yeah,
thank
no
you.
One knows. No one knows. And it's not video, it's audio. See, so they don't know who you are.
They don't know how red I am right now.
Okay, so that's the way it works, though, is that
yeah.
you, so you can over, you started to overeat as a
I would start,
way to control the drinking, or as
yeah,
a,
as a way
alternative?
To control the stress.
As a way to control the stress.
Really, the stress
yeah.
that I had.
Okay.
It was just really an anxiety. I had terrible anxiety about nothing. I mean, it was weird. I had anxiety about, like, I could be doing fun things. Like, I had a stained glass class I was taking, and I was delivering, like, senior meals and
mm-hmm.
doing some volunteer different things, okay? Fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I'd think about, like, tomorrow I have to do these four things, and I'd be, like, overwhelmed. And, you know, and plus I had two kids, which is not a lot of kids, but it was a lot for me.
Right.
And I think I was a good mom, but I had to keep everything balanced with my own stress relief, is what it seemed like. So I could be really good, but then I couldn't do it without like alcohol or the food. I couldn't do it without those two.
So here's a question that you know that comes up for me when I hear you know I hear that when it becomes difficult to function
mm-hmm.
without, it's like. Does the compulsion, the mental part of that, take up the space that you would have used to function?
It's possible that it did. Yeah.
You know, like a lot of times people get
yeah.
it. You know, you get it backwards. When you're using, you feel like you're overwhelmed so easy.
Right.
When in fact, you know, like you feel like you got six kids and you only got two.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? And so why are you so overwhelmed?
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder about that. I don't know.
I wonder too. I don't. Right now, sitting here, I don't even know.
Yeah.
I don't know which came first.
Yeah. Whether you were just naturally overwhelmed and needed the well, you're functioning now, aren't you?
Right. I'm functioning pretty well.
Yeah. So maybe. Well, we'll get. I mean, we'll talk more about the recovery part, like when we get to that. So
okay.
I guess maybe that there's some answers there. But I just was wondering about
mm-hmm.
that.
I think part of it. Maybe is like possibly like a mental physical, you know, like a not just something in my head. Like I, there was something wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a physical, mental problem. I don't know what kind.
And would more than just an addictions problem, or did that solve the problem for you? I mean, did that begin? Was that the solution?
Good question. No. Well, when I, okay, I don't want to. Well, I do. When I went to, when I was well past what I thought was like successful non-bulimic.
Yeah.
And I was still going to counseling, and all these people, it was a eating disorders counseling group. And okay, so I must have been struggling. I'm thinking I was over it, but I must not have. But I wouldn't have been in that group.
Yeah.
So I thought I was over it then. Shoot. All right.
And it was just maybe to help others.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure now.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right.
So long ago.
Yeah.
So all right. So now I must have had something, but I must have been thinking I had it under control.
Yeah.
I think that was it. And they kept trying to talk me into going to treatment for bulimia. I'm like, I don't even throw up anymore. It's been like 2 years, you know, which is not a long time in the scope of life with a problem like that. But
right.
Everyone else was going, and they were all coming back and reporting how much better they felt.
Mm.
So finally, it took me about 8 months, I think, to get talked into going. And I did go to a six-week outpatient
therapy. Mm-hmm.
And when I went there, they did a psychological, you know, with a mm-hmm. psychiatrist or whoever can give mm-hmm. medicine. And they said, you know, you have an anxiety disorder, and mm-hmm. they put me on Zoloft.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what made me think, because I'm still on it
mm-hmm.
and I'm happy to be on it.
Mm-hmm.
That much, but I'm a little concerned, that maybe it's not good for me after this many years. I don't know if I need it, but I'm not going to just go off of it. But it did, I remember when I got that after maybe a month, I remember thinking, wow, things that used to overwhelm me don't overwhelm me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think partly it was maybe, you know,
so there were some anxiety issues associated with all this.
Alongside it, because sure. I remember my son was graduating only from like eighth grade. But there was like seven things going on. I said to my husband, okay, this weekend we have this. Doesn't bother me a bit. Mm. I'm like, wow, this is great. And I was explaining to someone, they're like, I was trying to get a sponsor, and this one girl wouldn't sponsor me. She said, I can't sponsor anyone who takes medication.
Mm.
And I'm like, but it's like taking aspirin for a headache. It's not, you know, it's not, right. not on some loopy thing. But anyways,
right.
That's what makes me think that mm-hmm. since that took my anxiety away, and I had already been in AA for like a year, a little over a year at mm-hmm. that time, that I think it was partly a physical.
So some combination of those things for what helped you.
But I was wacky from a little kid. I mean, no doubt about that. I think that was just my thinking.
Right.
Because when I think back on it now, I think, like, I used to feel like a huge victim. Like,
yeah.
Everybody picked on me.
Huh.
But I was thinking, I was kind of a weird kid. Like, I don't really blame. They couldn't figure me out. They weren't picking on me. They didn't know what to do with me. Like, you're so quiet. And when we pick on you, you don't say anything. Like, that was what I was taught. Like, just ignore them. That
yeah.
doesn't work well.
Yeah, so you were just like...
I was just like, no one can see me but you guys. But,
yeah.
you know, I was just a closed book.
Okay.
And
yeah.
And then when I went to college, it all changed.
And then this, yeah, and then so some of this is a result of the way you function. Now, I'm going to ask you one other thing, and then I think we'll take a short break. But is the eating disorder thing associated more with women than men, from what you know, or
just from my experience, it is. Just from people I've met who have it. You know, I used to go to 12-step groups
mm-hmm.
with eating disorders, and
mm-hmm.
you know, 99% women were
okay.
in the groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, for me, I put a lot of pressure on myself not to gain weight. Mm-hmm. That was my main thing. Like, it was bad to gain weight if you were a girl, And it did not matter if you were a boy or a man or a lady.
Whatever. Yeah, it was more important.
Yeah, like if you're a girl and you're overweight, there's something wrong with you. And if you're a man, you're just husky.
Big.
Yeah, you're a big guy.
You're a big guy.
If someone said to me, which I have had this said many times, well, you're a big girl. I used to want to just die. And people said it to me because I'm tall.
Yeah.
And even when I was thin, they'd be like, well, you're a big girl. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, as if to say, you can really carry it. You can carry that weight or something. You know, whatever.
I don't know what they meant by it, but it's not a good thing to say to girls.
Right. So there's more of a focus on appearance maybe for women.
Yes. Well, and just everything with I remember reading Cheryl Teague's book when I was in college, like, her struggle against weight gain. You know, she had this probably like 3-month thing where she went on a diet. And I was thinking, that's how I got to be. I got to be like her because, you know, I don't know. I just wanted to be like that. I didn't want to have something wrong with me that people could see. That was what it was.
Sure.
When something's wrong with you and you know people can see it.
Yeah.
Before, everything else wrong with me was in my head.
But now
it's out there.
Yeah.
And that horrified me.
Yeah.
It really scared me.
Okay, well, I think we'll stop there. Good place to stop, and we'll pick up, you know, maybe talking a little bit about what turned the tide and the recovery and what that's been like, and I have a few other choice questions for you that we want to get to.
Okay.
So, we'll stop here, and I think we have some live music tonight. You want to do the intro, Chris? What do we got? What's happening?
Well, if you can introduce yourself if you want.
Okay,
well, let us know. Let us know what you're going to do here.
Yeah, this is Mike P. Who's going to play? What are you going to play, Mike?
I'm Mike, and I'm going to play Red Blouse.
Good.
Nice.
We'd like to hear it. So we'll let you do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fire it up. Okay. Yes, we are. We're back up. Boy, you've really improved. You've gotten pretty darn good on that.
Nice.
That thing. Yeah, that was good. I appreciate that. Red what?
Red Blouse.
Red Blouse by Emily Remler. Yeah.
Thanks.
That was a nice song.
Very nice.
Anyway,
thank you very much.
Thanks to Mike P. And so back to our interrogation. well, okay. So we were talking about this a little bit before we went on the air about bulimia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I and my question was, when did you know you were bulimic?
Right.
And you, yeah. So tell me
I
what you said.
I was like, I didn't ever really. It's not like I got formally diagnosed. I just knew, like it just happened to me. It's what it felt like. And I think it took me so long because, like I said, I started at college, and I only remember it because it started, it really had more to do with drinking to start with. Because, see, if you go throw up after you had a night of drinking, you're not going to be as hungover. That was my thought process.
Okay.
I heard one person say that once, and I just, like, latched onto it. That was, like, my every night thing after that. Drinking, okay, I don't want the hangover.
So I'll,
it didn't really work.
So I'll throw up, and then I won't.
Yeah, and I won't feel bad.
Yeah,
but it didn't work because it doesn't matter. I always had a hangover. So,
but that's how it started.
That's how it
and
started.
And I wonder if that's, if that's common or if it – I would have guessed that it would have started the other way, that it would have started with the idea that you needed to be watch your weight, you know.
Right. Well, no, because what happened after was in a panic mode already about that because I went to college, I gained 10 pounds, which, hello, that's normal, but I didn't know that was normal.
Right.
And I was very worried. It was like all of a sudden that seemed out of control.
Do you think other people knew that that was normal? And if that's the case, why didn't you know that it was normal?
Yeah. I didn't. No one told me. I don't know.
It just...
I mean, what are they? There's a name for it now, like the Freshman 15. Thank you. Yeah, like the Freshman 15. No one talked about that. I came back and actually my mom was like, wow, you gained a little weight. I mean, I was in Weight Watchers my sophomore year of college.
Really?
And I was hardly overweight. It must have been funny. Okay, here's how I know my weight so perfectly. This is why I know I'm still sick.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I got my physical to go into college, I weighed 118.
Yeah.
And the nurse said, and I remember this, wow, same as Miss America. And I remember that. I'm 52. So,
right.
That's the problem right there.
Right.
So when I went to Weight Watchers, I weighed 140. Well, from 118 to 140, like from my junior in college or whatever to junior high school, sophomore college, oh, my God, something's going wrong. There's a big problem here, and you better get a handle on it.
Right.
Although looking back, I still look perfectly normal.
Mm-hmm.
I hate
you were still within
it,
in the normal range, but you didn't know it.
I did not know it.
Yeah.
So, what were you talking about?
Well, that's okay because you know what I was thinking is that this is how the disease works. This is how the thinking works. It's not
right.
It's like you're you don't know what normal is.
Right.
And
yeah.
So you have to do things. You
and
think.
I don't talk about it to anyone either. That's another key.
Right. You're
back
drawing
then,
these conclusions.
No one talks about it.
Right.
Yeah. And I draw conclusions in my head, but no one says you don't need to do it. Like I joined Weight Watchers. Okay, fine. Well, since no one says you don't need to do that, I know.
You
I
just
have
assume.
I assume uh-huh. That means I have a problem.
Right.
Sure.
You know. So my junior year of college, okay, so sophomore year I joined Weight Watchers, right? Junior year I decide I need a geographical change because this is going to make it better. It's too much pressure. I was in a sorority, too much pressure here. Plus there was only like a couple bathrooms. Really hard to make my plan work. No privacy.
Right.
And so I went to...
Are you puking at this time?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's the plan.
That's the plan
going to have a...
Because after freshman year, what happened was you find out that I could do it with alcohol. I was like, well, it doesn't work with that, but maybe I could have some really good dessert, which I would never, you know, need or want to let myself have is kind of how I thought about it. You don't need that. You can't let yourself... then you could just throw up, and then you can have it. Oh, my God, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible.
Right.
Yes.
Awful. But your head said it was okay.
But my head then told me anytime I thought I overate anything, see it progress. Then it was like, then that mechanism is there, and then it's like, well, I ate too much dinner. Oh, this is not good. I'm going to gain weight. I better go.
It's
easy now.
Better
now
lose
it's easy. Let me just go get rid of that.
So
then I don't have to feel guilty.
Right. And are you at this time drinking less?
I'm drinking a lot on weekends.
A lot on weekends?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting through college, and I'm starting the weekend on Thursday and finishing on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I am, like, seriously studying.
All right. Well, you made it. You got it.
I got the degree.
Yeah. So, okay. So what? So we started talking about when you knew you were bulimic, and the whole thing was like you never really did.
I didn't really know.
You had never had a name for it.
No,
well,
no name. I thought I was really the only one like this.
Looking back, you still think that's true?
Oh God, no.
You think you were the only girl sneaking to the bathroom and puking?
Even back then, maybe not. But seriously, I think about that now. I think, geez, I didn't suspect anyone else. You know. I'm thinking back to the people I knew. I don't think it was just me. I mean, probably not, but that's. But now, I mean, sorority houses, they have like a name for the bathroom that's like several. They're all real open about it now, which is kind of terrible because it almost seems accepted.
They have a name for the bathroom?
I forgot the name, but my sister told me. She's like, that's the whatever. You know, that's the one that they use. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe they call it the bulimic bathroom.
They might.
Yeah. But you never, did you ever, even in later on in your treatment and in recovery, that wasn't something that was part of it in terms of
the use of the term? No, well, it was, here's the thing. I thought I was bulimic when I was throwing up.
Right.
And when I quit, I wasn't bulimic. And that's not true.
It's kind of like an alcoholic who stops drinking.
Yeah.
And who's no longer an alcoholic, right?
Right.
Yeah.
See, like I quit, and I remember the house I was living in when I quit out of like sheer will. Like I would say to myself, you either have to throw up every day for the rest of your life till you die, or you can't do it. And I'd want to throw up every day, but I'd be like, okay, it's every day, or you just can't.
Right.
And I was going to therapy and stuff, but... it was difficult. So when I finally had a stretch of time in there, like my head, my thinking wasn't straight at all, but the action had stopped. I'm like, not bulimic anymore. That's good. Got that over with.
Okay, we got
then,
that behind
then
us.
Then I moved on to AA, see? So then I thought, I have to handle is the alcohol now. This is good. So when I was in AA for like a year and they said I should go
to treatment,
I'm like, what? My thinking? It's thinking? I didn't get that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Did that resolve after treatment? I mean, did you figure that one out?
Oh yeah, I did.
And so what got straightened out in treatment as far as your thinking is concerned?
Well, first of all, I got a lot of little gifts out of that treatment. And one of them was I don't think this has to do with anything, but I'll just say it. I'm off task. But
that's okay. Let her rip.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, I had this need to know I was right. Because I had felt wronged all the time.
Uh-huh.
I always felt misunderstood. Sounds silly now.
Mm-hmm.
But so I was going through this therapy, and I kept trying to, like, prove to them that I was good. I'm good. I'm a good person.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with me. I'm not throwing up anymore. I mean, I don't know what you want me to do here. and plus my AA sponsor is going out of the country and tomorrow, and she didn't even tell me till today. Now, isn't that wrong? And they're like, there's no right or wrong. I'm like, no, let me explain to you like why it's wrong. And,
So you needed to be wrong. You needed to be in the wronged category.
Yeah. So I was explaining like all the things that led up to her knowing she was going, but not telling me, and on and on. And then all of a sudden, he was like, you can't discuss this anymore because it doesn't matter. And I'm like, I don't get that. I just don't get it. And I got stuck, rest of the day, more sessions. I got stuck in traffic on the way home on 294. And I'm stuck in traffic. And, like, that's just going through my mind. I'm like, oh, I get it. Oh, my God. It doesn't matter. I was like, oh, my God. It's in my head. I was like, it doesn't. They don't have to know. They don't have to think I'm right. I mean, I know what I know. And it hurt my feelings, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's a big thing.
Yeah.
It sounds like a little thing to me, but it's a big thing.
Well, to me, what it sounds like is what it's like when the lights start going on in recovery. They don't all come on at once. The little ones start coming on first.
Right.
But then that leads to a whole lot of lights. You know what I mean?
That feeling of I get that.
Well, when you first start really like looking at you and
right.
you go, oh,
darn.
Oh, that
me.
Was just, that was my,
yeah,
that was my goofiness.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot.
Well, I mean, I call that recovery. I don't know what you call it.
Well, I was doing the fourth step and my husband was like, I don't understand. I was using a workbook, writing down all my resentments. And he's like, I don't get this. And so I said, it's like I am mad at everybody in the whole world. Like even my neighbor for something she did that has nothing to do with me. You know, I'm mad at everybody. I feel like everything that happens to everybody, it happened to me because they were my friend or my neighbor or my whatever. So I'm feeling all this on me. And so I got to put it all down and then I'm going to figure out like what my part is in it. And he goes, oh, like make it all your fault? I'm like, no, no. But I didn't know I had a part in any of it. Like, all my resentments and all my victimness.
And you didn't even know you were a victim.
No, but I thought all this stuff happened to me, and it didn't happen to me. I didn't think I was part of it. I didn't think I had any part in it.
So you were just looking for your piece of the pie.
I found my piece.
Yeah.
My pieces.
Yeah, your pieces.
In recovery, I found my pieces. And my pieces gave me peace. They did. They did because then I'm all done blaming everyone else.
Yeah.
And that was a huge gift.
So I have a maybe this is a hard one, I don't know.
It might be.
But could be, we'll see. How do you feel about yourself, your body and now, today?
Okay.
How did you get to that place,
okay.
you know, a little bit?
So I've had to work at it over the years because since I'm not binging and purging, mm-hmm. I'm not drinking, I don't smoke, I feel like I try to keep my spiritual connection up, but I still overeat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm overweight.
Mm-hmm.
And I do this. I have come to just accept myself
mm-hmm.
for how I am. Now, sometimes I still am an emotional eater. So
mm-hmm.
I feel like that's something I need to work on still. But somehow, there's two things to this.
Okay.
One is, I still like myself okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like myself more now than I ever did
mm-hmm.
when I weighed 80 pounds less. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I accept myself now. I don't think something happened in me.
I gotta have you say that one more time. You like yourself way more now than you did when you weighed 80 pounds less.
I hated myself back in the day
right.
when I was struggling against this, when
right.
I thought that weight was the only thing that mattered. All I could see was that the pressure of trying to keep weight off was enormous. And someone asked me way back then when I was 80 pounds less than I am now,
mm-hmm.
and I was felt huge and horrible. She said, I don't really get it. If you died today, if you're fat or you're thin, what does it matter if you died today? And like I knew she thought it was a serious question, or like something, you know, what does it really matter? I'm like, that casket is going to be heavy. I am not going to be laying in there being this big limp. You know, like I thought it was a serious problem. But now I think like it's not. I'm sorry that I thought it was the most important thing because it's not who I am.
Yeah.
And I
how did you get to that?
I don't know. It's some kind of miracle, honestly. I'd say somehow it has to, because really to put my finger on it, it has to do with acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
From acceptance, like of myself, it probably didn't come from me first. It probably came from me sharing things and feeling accepted from other people and from...
And where'd you get that?
I got that in AA and 12-step programs and therapy.
Okay.
But a lot...
A lot of it?
A lot of it I got in AA because that's the one thing I've done consistently every week, many times a week for the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like a spillover effect of everything in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was... I had all this fear in my head, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Fear that if I said what I thought, people would know there was something wrong.
Right.
And they would not only would they not like me, they
would think you were crazy or...
They would think I don't think they would think I was crazy because I would hide that much. They would definitely think I was weird.
Right.
So they wouldn't want anything to do with me. So when I came into 12-step programs and talked at meetings and said things that I didn't think were funny at all, and people chuckled, and then I gave them the look like, you're killing me, you're laughing at me, and they're like, oh, God, we're not laughing at you, we're laughing with you, we know what you're talking about. I just couldn't believe it. Like, I could not believe the things that I had locked up in my head for so long, other people felt.
Do you have an example of something that that was locked up that you wouldn't have shared when you finally shared that people laughed?
Well, right now I don't, but it might come to me in a second because I'll tell you this other thing.
Okay.
we were at this women's group, the first women's
Hold
group
that thought.
I ever
yeah,
went
go ahead.
To. Okay, yeah. And two things. One of them was the counselor, Mo, my very dear friend, now said, take the person next to you and tell them a secret. And I was about 30.
Mm-hmm.
No secrets. I didn't think I had any secrets. Like, I seriously was racking my brain because I want to be a good student. And I'm in this class. And, like, I got this girl, and I'm like, and everybody's breaking up, and she tells me whatever it is. I don't remember. And I'm like, it's so weird, but I don't have any. Like, okay, now I'm throwing up. My husband doesn't know it. I drink too much. I have a list like this long once I got into my steps. But I seriously don't think I have any. No, I can't think of any. No, I would tell you if I had one, but I can't.
It just wasn't there.
Yeah,
just not there. So it was so far hidden for me because I really was trying. It took a long time to get that out. And another very strange but unbelievably good therapy for me was everyone in this group got sent out to do different things. And mine was to go to the mall and go to a bookstore and just look and don't buy anything. Just look for a certain number of minutes. And I didn't expect this at all, but I'm looking in there and I'm starting to feel, I'm just walking around and I'm starting to feel so paranoid. And I'm like, oh, my God, they think I'm going to steal from them. Oh, my God, they think I'm not. I'm, like, going to hold my hands over here. I'm not. And, like, I had forgotten, yes, that that's something that I did, like, in my early 20s. Like, totally not in my mind. I just became like, oh, God, why would they, here's me, why would they think that? Why would they think I'm going to steal?
You forgot that you had
shoplifted. Yeah, shoplifted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Forgot. Not in my recent memory bank at all. So
things like
really
that.
They kicked in.
Yeah, things like that came back. And then you could share stuff like that in your 12-step meeting.
I share it like
sure.
No big deal.
I
mean, for a long time, though, I'd be like, oh, this is a terrible thing. I don't know if I can, I'll tell my sponsor, but I'm not telling anybody else. You know,
right.
It all started real small like that.
Don't want everybody to know.
Yeah, God.
Yeah, we don't want to go. Yeah, we don't want to go whole hog.
Because I don't want everybody to be looking at me like, loser. Well, because first of all, when I came in.
And they didn't, did they?
No, they didn't. When they came in, I thought everybody who was in AA, they weren't going to be like me. I just came as a last resort, really, because.
Right.
Because, I just couldn't. I was binge drinker, you know, and I couldn't stop the binging.
Right.
So I had one night where my son woke up sick, and I had too much to drink at home with my husband. And I didn't wake up, and I always woke up, you know, no matter what. My husband did not wake up usually. I slept like eggshells, like anything the kids needed, I was there. Well, I didn't wake up, not at all. And he was thrown up sick, and the next day my husband was like, wow, you were really out last night. And I'm like, yeah, I don't remember going to bed.
Just fell asleep.
Yeah, I think I fell asleep on the couch. And so that was, and he told me about our son being sick, and this dread came over me because I had remembered the night before making these, they were supposed to be fun little cocktails, but what happened to me is the same thing with eating, with drinking, eating, like you think you're just going to have an ice cream cone, but then like, okay, then, like, oh, then that was really good, so I'm going to go through the drive-thru and I'll get a shake. And then I'm going to the Jewel, and I'll just buy a half gallon. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what would happen.
Yeah, one so, leads to another. You rang the bell.
And drinking was the same. And my only memory of that night was early in the evening, and when I poured a drink that was supposed to be like a lot of fruit juice and a little bit of whatever, that I went like, poured the, I don't know, rum, whatever it was, drank a whole glass of it, because that was good, and then just made another one that looked normal. Didn't tell anybody I did that. So he didn't know, like, why couldn't get you to bed last night. So that was my last,
That was the last time.
That was, well, actually I had one more after that because we were entertaining on New Year's Eve that right before. And, you know, I had to, at that time, like, what's New Year's Eve without a margarita?
Right.
So.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, just the one. So it control
was,
freak.
But it was the it sounds like it was the shame about not being capable of taking care of your son. That
it was.
What got
and
you.
It was shame and it was fear.
Yeah.
Like that. Okay, the fear was, I never did know when that kind of thing would happen.
Right.
And that could happen. It could happen anytime. I had been away from home when it happened. And that was, but I didn't want to call because... my vision of what an alcoholic was so much lower than where I thought I was at that I really thought, like, I'm really scraping the bottom of the barrel here, but, you know, I can't do this by myself, so I'll just try it.
Right.
And so consequently, it took me like a month to say I was an alcoholic at a meeting because I'm like, I don't know, you know, I drink too much a little bit, but...
So it's like your
we'll see.
Your history kind of had to catch up to you a little bit to really start making sense.
Yes.
And did it help to hear other people's stories in that time so that you could see yourself?
It helped later when they kept chuckling at my stories.
Yeah.
And then they told me that they understood those stories.
Right.
Yeah, because some of their stories were like, that was a good excuse for me to say, nope, not that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot, people that were worse.
There's so many different kinds.
Sure.
And at the very beginning even, I used to think like, well, I'm just like a sort of an alcoholic. Like I'm a, you know.
Kind of a recreational alcoholic.
I had myself like on a higher level.
Yeah.
And then.
That's another one of those it doesn't matter things, isn't it?
Well, then I remember hearing someone like 5 years ago saying, the same thing that I think I used to think in the beginning, like, well, I'm not like those people. And then I was like, you know, I used to think that. It's so funny that you say that because now I know we're all exactly alike.
Yeah.
Like that, because those little details don't matter. There's so many core things.
That makes sense.
That makes sense.
So let me ask you this, and then we're probably getting pretty close to the time that we need to close here, but I'd like to close with this. With this question with most people that come on the show, and that is, what if you had a newcomer that had problems similar to yours, that had struggled with the eating and struggled with the drinking, and they were somehow tied together.
Right.
What kind of stuff? What would you tell them? What would you say to a newcomer, a person who came to you and asked you for your help or your advice?
I can picture people like that, mm-hmm. because I can picture people that I've met like that, and the only thing I think I could say, I could tell them, are kind of things that I have said tonight about my experience,
mm-hmm.
because I know that, like, looking back, gosh, I wish I would have gotten it earlier. I wish I didn't have to go through all that. I wish I knew that it was okay. I wish I knew it was okay to feel the way I felt. I wish I felt different. You know, I wish I had permission to feel differently, or I gave myself permission at a younger age. Mm. But I would just tell them, honestly, I would just tell them to keep coming back.
Right.
Like, if I met them at a meeting, the only way I got it was by, like, soaking stuff in. I don't think there's anything I can say to one person. If someone could have talked me out of it, I mean, nobody really tried. Mm-hmm. But if someone could have, I'm very rebellious. I wouldn't have listened. And I think I'm right all the time.
Right.
So I always did. I mean, I'm better now, but people know. They're like, oh, geez.
Don't try to tell her.
Yeah,
that's funny.
So, like, you're going to, like, probably not give a lot of advice. Just let it soak in. Be gentle.
Like,
keep coming back. Let it soak in.
I am glad you asked me these questions, because I haven't thought of them in a long time.
Yeah.
And the things about myself and my eating disorder especially, it was caused so much pain to me, like mental anguish and pain and stuff. And I just think it's so amazing and unbelievable. And like I say, it's just some kind of miracle that I am not shackled with that right now. You know, I just know that what people have said to me is, like, you know, your worth is not what you look like. That's not where your worth comes from. But I remember I was like, yeah, but I don't have any. People talk about gifts. I don't have any gifts. You know, I don't have any talents. I always felt empty. Mm. And so I had to have something. So mm-hmm. I chose my looks. Mm-hmm. That is what I chose. And I tried to. And then when I couldn't control it the way I wanted to, that led to the spiral. But
do you know you have gifts today?
Now I do. And I never thought I would. How about that?
You know, we have a question from the audience, and I think that it relates right to what you're talking about. But since your experiences in college with body image, what would you say to a current or incoming college student that might be going through the same thing? You know, somebody at that
right.
stage.
Right. Hmm? Well, the biggest thing is when you go to college, I mean, you have so many freedoms that you never had. Hmm. And what the things I took as freedoms, everything I took as a freedom, I like overdid it. Hmm. I overdid everything.
Sure.
don't sleep, eat too much, drink too much, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, and it was because I felt some, what's the word, like entitlement, like I had never got to do these really fun things before, so I'm doing them now.
Mm-hmm.
And, I didn't have to do that. that wasn't, I was like showing my, you know, at the time myself, my little
yeah.
self was showing the world that I'm going to just do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the rebellious part. So probably I couldn't get rid of that. But the thing I would say though, and I've tried to actually tell my son this, because our youngest son is real thin and he's very conscious of his weight. And I try to tell him, like, you are a great person and it doesn't matter. Look at me. I am happy. And he said to me once, after I had gained weight, after I went to treatment, I lost weight because mm-hmm. I was on a structured plan, and I gained the weight. And he said to me, Mom, you know, I saw that picture from when you were skinny, and you're a lot fatter now. Like, he was only like 12. And I said, yeah, but I'm still nice. Mm-hmm. That's what I said. I'm like that was my comeback. Like, I'm still nice.
And that's a good message.
And that was, you know what, that's more important, to focus on
who you are, not what you look like, or
who I am, how I feel, and sharing my feelings. That was a big one.
Not hiding.
Don't keep everything in. Don't think you're the, I thought I was the only one. You know, there's thousands, millions probably, but that was a big one.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I appreciate that. That was a good question. Thank you. So I want to thank you for coming tonight. Time flies, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Time does fly. And so thanks to you for coming tonight. Thanks for our studio audience and Mike P for Red Blouse.
Yeah, that was great.
Mike's going off to college, so we're not going to have him for a while. But when you come back, you'll play again. When you're back on vacation, all right.
I have gained 15 pounds by now.
That's right.
That's right, because he's going to college.
That's right.
And thanks to our listeners out there who either tuned in tonight and heard us live, or will tune in sometime in the course of the week and hear us in an archived fashion on our website, which is
recoveryinternetradio.com.
So we'll email out our reminders for next week's show. And what's really nice is that I email out probably 160, 170 reminders every week. So if you want to be on the email reminder list, go to the website and you can sign up there. But what's nice is people must be passing the link along, because a lot more than 150 people listen to it every week.
Yeah.
So it's out there, and we encourage everybody who does get a reminder to pass it along to anybody who they think might be, you know, somebody who would want to listen to our little Sunday night deal.
Absolutely, or any of the ones in the past. We've got,
or any of the ones,
71 shows to pick from. So there's plenty of topics.
We got a lot
there.
A lot of stuff out there. So So check Recovery Internet Radio for all of our shows, and we want to hear from you. We want to know where you are. So, as always, live today, love yourself and your neighbor, and together we'll trudge the happy road to destiny. We hope you've enjoyed the show tonight, and we'll see you at 8 p.m. next Sunday night.